Here's Higdon, it sits up nicely for Michael Higdon! And what a start for Motherwell! But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Sutton! Magnificent Malt! Stephen Robinson celebrates! Motherwell, 2-1! Could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep in to stop its time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. It's been a couple of weeks since we last recorded, and tonight I'm joined by Pepe and Greg Marshall to go over the victory against Dundee. We'll preview next week's game against Aberdeen. We'll recap the transfer window, discuss the international break and record season ticket sales at Motherwell. Guys, how's it going?
Oh, yeah, good, thanks. Good.
Good to hear it. Greg, I'll start with yourself tonight. We're going back a couple of weeks, I know, the 1-0 victory over Dundee. It certainly wasn't the most easy in the eye, the game. I think over the 90 minutes, we could maybe consider ourselves slightly fortunate to come away with all 3 points. But again, Tony Watt comes up with a big goal. Myself and Pepe discussed in the previous podcast how important it would be for Tony Watt to find regular goal scoring form. He seems to be doing that. And we look at the first 4 games, 7 points from 12. Got to be relatively satisfied with that.
Yeah, definitely. I thought it was a tough game. It wasn't the easiest to watch, to be honest. But it was a hard fought to win in the end, and good to actually build on a win the previous week as well against Livingston. So no, I was happy to come away with a win, but it wasn't as comfortable as it could have been. I think, to be honest with you, Dundee probably did deserve to at least get a point out of the game. Just the way we struggled to keep the ball, and they did create a good few chances themselves. But no, it was good to finally get on the right side of a result that we maybe shouldn't have got. But you know, it's part of the game as well, is holding on to those wins that you might not deserve. So no, I was really, really pleased with it.
Sometimes these victories can be just as satisfying as going and winning 4 or 5 nil. We maybe didn't deserve it, but we battled hard and we went down to 10 men for the last 20 minutes as well. I did say in the previous podcast, I felt that Jake Carroll always has a red card in him. He didn't let me down. His 50th appearance for the club, and he marked it with a red card. But overall, I think it was just a feeling of real satisfaction after the game, despite the fact I was well aware that we hadn't played that well.
I wasn't at the game, however. I had the privilege of sitting watching it in the co-op at Anfield, waiting on Liverpool-Chelsea coming out, and it was quite a weird experience. Obviously, when the final whistle went, there was a cheer and everybody kind of turned around and looked and wondering what I was up to. But I seen the majority of the game. And certainly, Dundee had a few chances. Certainly, they had a good shot that hurt the underside of the bar. I never really felt that they were going to cause us too much problems. As Greg alluded to earlier on, it was good to actually come away for a game like that. Having not played well, maybe not created as much as we previously had, and still got the points. And the Jake Carroll situation, I think I'd said that I felt that previously in games, and I'd highlighted a couple of examples, he just didn't look the same player. Now, whether it's been that he's lost a bit of pace if he come back for his kind of long-term injury, I don't know. I know we're going on to speak about the transfer window. I was kind of half hoping that there would have been a left-back coming in. I'm not overly convinced with Nathan McGinley, probably more solid defensively than what Carroll is. But with the formation that we play, there's a big onus put on the two full-backs, obviously playing as wing-backs, and I don't think that fits Nathan McGinley's kind of attributes very well at all. But overall, it's good to see the one another positive that I've taken out of the game is that Tony Watt seems to consistently be scoring. Is that because he's playing a bit more central? I don't know, but certainly it was good. The only thing, when you're not at the game, it's obviously different, and you're watching it on a stream and stuff like that, the reception was going and stuff, so I've probably seen about just over half of the game, probably about 60% of it. And then when you're on the likes of streaming online, Twitter and stuff like that, there's still always a fair degree of negativity about it. But again, it's 3 points, and I've continued to say it, the manager's record is pretty good win ratio, if you look at it, and he just seems to be able to find a way to grind out results, and that can only be a good thing going forward.
I think, I suppose, when you go into any international break, despite the fact it's only after 4 games of the season, you do have a wee bit of reflection and you kind of analyse where you're at that point in time. I think when you go over the 4 games, Hibs at home, for me, that's a point. St Johnstone away, again, you're looking to get a point from there. Livingston away, we've come up short a few times. So, again, I would have said that if we had drawn the first 3 games, I wouldn't have been too surprised. And then I would have been really hoping for all 3 points against Dundee. So, possibly in my head, I was thinking 6 points would have been the target. So, to get 7, and maybe it's a wee bit simplistic just to break down every game and analyse what you should or shouldn't be getting from them. But 7 points from 12 is a good start.
I think it is definitely a good start, and the performances maybe up until the Dundee game have really merited what we've got, if not been a bit unlucky, talking with the Hibs and the St Johnstone game especially. But I was looking deeper into the numbers a bit earlier, and you can see that our overall general stats, for instance, expected goals for and against, gives you a good indication of how a team's playing. And finally, for the first time in over a year, we're expected to score more goals than we are to concede. So I think you can see that it is working, and there is a plan there to get us. It might not be the prettiest sometimes, but there is a plan to try and get us a result there. And it looks to be on the up, I certainly think. And I think that Dundee result will keep the momentum going, which is something that we've struggled to do over the past season.
The last recording, the transfer window has slammed shut. 2 more additions to the squad on that day. Solom Johansson coming in, a Norwegian centre-back that we've been heavily linked with in the previous couple of weeks. And then the return of Jordan Roberts, Pepe, who had a really successful loan spell last season, a popular figure amongst the supporters. He seems to be completely out of favour at Hearts. But he's got a chance here to kind of kick on again. The deal is only until January, which took me a wee bit by surprise, it must be said. But I think the one thing I've noticed with Tony Watt is he's carrying the burden for the front three at times when Justin and Ken Woolery are playing. I think that neither winger has contributed enough in the league games so far. So I think the addition of Roberts will be a massive, massive boost for us.
So I was happy when he signed, certainly more happy than I was in the previous transfer window. I do think that he brings, I always go back to that Hibs game where I thought he was absolutely brilliant. My concern with him is his injury record isn't great. If you look at his games played, it isn't great reading. But again, I would have him in my starting team in Saturday, so that must be a good thing. So, I'm happy that he's here, and I think it was a kind of obvious choice. I think we all thought it had been done earlier, and I don't understand why it is only until January, unless we sign him in loan until January, get a pre-contract signed in January, and then get him in loan again. I don't know if that's the reasoning behind it.
It's an interesting one, the forward areas. The 4-3-3 has been quite widely criticised, despite the fact that it's brought with it a degree of success so far in the league anyway. But the two wingers for me don't work. I don't think that either of them have got up to speed at the rate we would want them to. Kevin Van Veen was very good against Hibs in the opening day. Since then, he's been a bit part player. I can't really see how it would work with Watt and Van Veen in the same front line, because I think it's clear for everyone to see now that Tony Watt's much more effective through the middle, and with it, it brings goals as well. So a wee bit of challenge there for Kevin Van Veen. But I think the overriding thing with Roberts is that it gives us an extra option, and that certainly can't be a bad thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think we do have great depth in almost every position now, maybe apart from right back. But no, you know what he's going to bring you. He's certainly probably in the Woolery mould, as in he's big, he's strong, but he's also quick and he can get in behind. And I think that's what Alexander looks for in his wingers. He looks for Watt maybe to drop a bit deeper, and or Van Veen, for instance, drop deeper in the middle and get a touch of the ball, and looks for one or both of his wingers to try and get in behind. So I think that certainly suits Roberts, and it also suits the other options we've got in those areas like Woolery and Shields, and I'm a loser as well. So no, I think it's good to see that he's got a plan of the type of player he wants. So it's just about getting the system working the way he wants it now, I think.
Can't be a surprise that any players didn't leave on deadline day. I pinpoint guys like Robbie Crawford and Stephen Lawless as well, who seems to be quite far out the picture just now. I would have maybe hoped that a few players would have been cut from the squad, or does the manager just stick with what he knows and keep these options in case of injuries and obviously isolation rules and such like just now?
I think that's it. Robbie Crawford would have been the first one out the door, in my opinion. I just don't think he's good enough. Lawless, I think he's a decent enough player to have in about the squad. If you looked kind of January time last year, when we could virtually barely pick a decent 11, I think that he would come into the reckoning, and he's good to have it about the squad. I think the difference this season is we're back down to the 7 substitutes, so you kind of do notice to players that don't get picked. But I do agree with you with regards to Lawless. I mean, for me, he's behind Arne Loser now. He's behind Woolery. He's behind Roberts, probably even Connor Shields. And obviously, you can't even look at him in the same vein as Van Veen or Tony Watt. So as Greg has said, we've certainly got strength and depth up there. But I'm pretty sure that if the three of us had to try and pick a front three or even the 11, there's no way that we would come up with the same 11 for Saturday.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone could second guess Graeme Alexander, to be perfectly honest with you. We all know that tomorrow he'll have his pre-match press conference where he'll tell a few porkies and then absolutely stun us at 1:45 on Saturday afternoon. But I suppose the thing is, from Livingston to Dundee, we did stick with the same starting 11, so it was nice to see a wee bit of continuity in the guys that earned the win at Livingston being rewarded with a place in the starting 11. Greg, an interesting one for me is the addition of Johansson, which makes our options at centre-back very, very strong. Is there a preferred pairing that you've got at the back there? I'm kind of struggling to pick two.
I mean, without seeing too much of Johansson playing, I like Oyala. I think there's a lot of people seem a bit frustrated with how he used the ball against Dundee in particular. You know, he is very no-nonsense. He'll get rid of it, but I think he plays with his strengths well and he defends well. So I think I'd keep Oyala in. And from what I've watched of Johansson, I've managed to watch a wee bit of him online. He's great at defending the box. He's strong. He's really good in the air, but he's also capable of stepping out into midfield and running with the ball at feet. Maybe not playing long passes over the top, but he can certainly step in and bring a wee bit of composure. So for me, I think I'd like to see Oyala and Johansson starting together. I think Ricky Lamy is just, he just has too many errors. I think against Dundee, we saw him once again getting easily turned by a striker who, this time Jason Cummins, who didn't have to do an awful lot. Lamy just gets far too tight too often for me. So yeah, I think it'd be Johansson and Oyala, certainly against Aberdeen.
Good point. That again as well. He hit the deck very easily. I think he's got to be more powerful in these situations. It's exactly how we lost the goal to Christian Doidge against Hibs. Lammy's not strong enough. He's putting his backside, and before you know it, the ball's in the net. I feel a bit sorry for him because I do think he's improved on last season. A lot of people will say that he's not set the bar very high in that regard, but again, he was one that I thought maybe there's a chance that they might just shell him because you do have McGabby, who I would say is above Lammy in the pecking order as well. And you would never have thought that would have been the case a short time ago. It's unfortunate, but I don't really see much way back for him.
I think the fact that Lammy's left-footed is keeping him in and around the place solely because I think Alexander will tend to maybe shift into a back five later on in games if we're ahead. And the only real other option at centre-half that is left-sided would be Nathan McGinley. And we've heard loads of times Stephen Robinson said it when he first came in that he's more of a left fullback than a left centre-half. So I think that's probably playing in Lammy's favour just now.
I don't see the manager dropping Ricky Lammy. I think given maybe in a couple of games down the line, probably we've got Rangers after Aberdeen.
I think that you're more likely to see McGabby and Lammy. Lammy and potentially Oyala. I think that Lammy will be the first pick. It'll be Lammy and another. I totally agree with everything you have said about him. He also ended up in his arse when Dundee scored the goal. And it seems to be pivotal mistakes that he makes. He always seems to make an underhit pass as well, I've started to notice. But on the other side, I think that he's improved really a lot. And this time we need a bit of consistency. I think bringing in two guys that are relatively new to Scottish football against Aberdeen, who haven't been firing all cylinders, but they've spent a bit of money. I think you need a wee bit of kind of a experience of the Scottish game, and I think like Ricky Lammy will be it. I actually think it'll be McGabby and Lammy on Saturday.
I'm not sure, and then you've still got a corner there as well that's still a wee bit of press over the international break, and you would have to imagine that means that he is in the reckoning somewhat. So five players vying for two places, it's certainly competitive, and it is certainly nice to have that headache. Though I still think that we're at the stage where we maybe struggle to find a strong pairing. It'll be interesting to see how Johansson does. It's far too early to judge him, and even after Saturday, it'll be far too early to judge him. I think the same goes for Ayala, although I've been quite surprised that he's not been quite as physical as I imagined that he would be, and given his stature as well, I thought he'd be a bit more powerful. But yeah, I guess it's only the manager that knows. We'll move on and preview the Aberdeen game on Saturday. Greg, it's always a tough game. We look back to last season, the only game at Fir Park finished 0-0. The season before that, we went down 3-0 at home. But we did record victories at Pittodrie, and last season was no different as well. We obviously went there early on in the season and got a 3-0 victory. How do you see this one going? Aberdeen enjoyed a pretty decent start to the league campaign, but a wee bit of a setback going out of Europe and then the 1-1 draw at home to Ross County.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one to call, especially with how Aberdeen have been this season. As you said, they've been up and down. To start with, I thought they looked really good against Haken in Europe, but since then they've kind of tailed off a wee bit. I think that's kind of, you're going to see that with a new manager and a new style and a lot of new players that they've brought in. But no, I think if we if we go and try and press, I think we've got a chance because they are going to a more possession based style, and I think we have to get in at them. The one thing that does worry me slightly is how narrow we tend to play, and you know they look very dangerous in the fullback areas. Calvin Ramsey especially has had a great start to the season, and I think that obviously Jake Carroll will miss this game, so it'll more than likely be Ramsey versus McGinley out in that wing, and I think that's maybe an area that that might be a problem for us. But no, I think it'd be good to get a bit of continuity with the team. Hopefully there's not too many changes from the Dundee game, considering we did manage to get the 3 points. So no, I'm looking forward to it certainly, and always like playing against Aberdeen because we do seem to get some big results against them now and again.
It's one to look forward to. I think you always look forward to the first game back after an international break, albeit that we've had plenty of football to occupy ourselves with over the last fortnight.
I think it's always as well that you've got the transfer window coming into play as well, where we've not seen Roberts and Johansson either. So that adds a wee bit of excitement. And even to the extent, when you look at the amount of players that we have signed over the last wee while, I've not seen Sean Goss in the flesh as such. So I'm looking forward to that. And look, if you look at some of the signings Aberdeen have made, I mean, obviously, the Panamanian villain and Scott Brown being there, but one of the best bit of businesses in the transfer window for me was Matty Longstaff. Having seen him playing at Newcastle, some of the goals that he scored, I was really, really, really surprised. And it appeared that he'd actually knocked back a few championship teams to come to Aberdeen. So it is shaping up to be a good game. Really looking forward to it. It'll be the first time that I'm back at Fir Park with kind of all the restrictions lifted, although Hibs did kind of feel like it. But I'm really looking forward to it. As I always do in the season, I kind of map out what I think I would expect, and anything else is a bonus, and I would happily at the moment take a draw. I think that would be a good result against Aberdeen, especially the fact that both teams are coming off the international break. So I would probably settle for a draw. Obviously, it's different depending on how you play. If we feel robbed, then you come away for the game really disappointed. But a point on the table would do me good because we're going on to Rangers in the not too distant future.
Yeah, that's certainly one that I don't think any of us will look forward to with much anticipation, it must be said. But you've got to kind of deal with the game in hand. Have you seen much of Aberdeen, Greg? I know that you kind of follow the analytical side of the game pretty closely. For me, it seemed like they did their usual. They got a couple of good results to start the season. They beat Dundee United quite comfortably in the opening day. Then a late goal to defeat Livingston. Since then, it does seem like it's tailed off somewhat. The hype not quite living up to that.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. They did start off really well and they were a bit of an unknown quantity, but just all the players that they had brought in. But yeah, watched them against Haken in Europe. I think it was the 5-1 game at Pittodrie. They were really, really good. Just looked in complete control, creating clear-cut chances here, there and everywhere. But then they went away to Haken and they were defeated. And as you said, they had a couple of not quite strong performances in the league. But I did have a look at their numbers against Ross County in the game that they struggled with there, and they seemed to absolutely blow them off the park, to be honest. I think Ross County were quite lucky to take anything from the game, albeit it was a Ross Laidlaw mistake that ultimately handed Aberdeen that point. But no, I think they'll definitely be a different team than we've seen come to Fir Park in recent years. And, you know, it's just a kind of seeing if we can match up to a different task, a team that wants to get the ball down a bit more, and see if we can go and give them problems.
I actually watched the Ross County Aberdeen game, and they did for the last kind of 10, 15 minutes, maybe even 20 minutes, Aberdeen just completely pounded them. But in doing so, they looked as if they were a wee bit shaky at the back. Ross County got the park on more than one occasion and can maybe have went two in front at one point. Although they did kind of pound Ross County, there wasn't too many clean-cut chances that came their way. They had a lot of possession. And I think that we're a better quality team than Ross County. So, as I said, I'd be disappointed if we don't come away with a draw on Saturday.
International break ended in a high point. The victory over Austria in Vienna. A fantastic result that really put Scotland in prime position to earn a playoff place ahead of the World Cup. Greg, a lot of talk around Stephen O'Donnell's inclusion in the starting 11 to begin with. Obviously, he had been out of Motherwell games since the St Johnstone game in the second game of the season. So he'd missed three competitive matches for Motherwell, then missed the first two qualifiers for Scotland, the games against Denmark and Moldova. He came back in. I know Nathan Patterson had to pull out, so that certainly made him almost a stick-on to play on Tuesday night. And for me, he came in and did fantastically well. Yes, there was points where his distribution wasn't as it should have been, and I think it would be fair to assess that he's not up to the standard of some of the players that are playing at the highest level down south that are in the Scotland squad. But one thing you'll get with Stephen O'Donnell is 100% commitment, and I think he did a fantastic job for the second time in a row. David Alaba, a multi-million pound right back, really did not relish the challenge of going up against Motherwell's right back. In fact, I would say that O'Donnell got the better of him.
Yeah, I think there was parts of O'Donnell's performance that were really outstanding, to be honest. You always see, whether that be on Twitter or even in the more mainstream media, he gets criticised all the time. And to be fair, against Austria, there was, as you said, there was parts of the game where in possession he just wasn't at it at all. He picked the wrong pass, or you know, it's not at the right pace or anything. But yeah, he had a really good game, and you know what you're going to get from Stephen O'Donnell. I think something he doesn't get credit for is his just sheer athletic ability. He's quick. He will go all day, whether that be running forward as you saw against Austria or running back. And I think fair play to Steve Clark for trusting him and noticing that, you know, Alaba was going to push forward. There was going to be a chance to exploit the space in behind him. And they certainly did that. I think O'Donnell had a good few chances to get a good ball in the box where, you know, he fluffed his lines a bit, but he also had a couple of chances to score himself. So, no, I think he, once again, has done enough to certainly keep him in the squad for the upcoming games in October. And hopefully, from a Motherwell point of view, keep him in the starting 11. But I think we'll just need to wait and see if Nathan Patterson can get any appearances for Rangers, and that might tip it in his favour.
Yeah, very well do so. There is a fair clamour for Nathan Patterson. And obviously, Alaba, a left-back, not a right-back. But I'm struggling with a bit of a cold, so I'll make my excuses right now. Pepe, I think it's quite strange that some of the criticism levelled at Stephen O'Donnell seems to come from our own supporter base. There's points in the early stages where his ability was being questioned and he was getting a wee bit of stick. And this isn't the first time we've had to discuss that over the course of this season. And we're very early doors. We're only at the start of September. But I think it's a magnificent feat, the fact that he's now joint record appearance holder or cap winner as a Motherwell player for Scotland. A huge honour. He's a club captain. I was off the couch when he was going clear through and goal. I would have loved to see him tuck that chance away. Maybe lacked the energy in his legs at that point in the game to take the ball a wee bit further forward and angle it across the goalkeeper. But overall, a very, very impressive performance. And it just shows that while effort will only get you so far, it's getting Stephen O'Donnell a hell of a way forward. A brilliant performance against England, a second very good performance against Austria, and he's never really let Scotland down, let's be fair.
I'm glad that you brought that up. What I would say about the Motherwell support, the majority of the Motherwell support, mainly on Twitter, were very supportive of Stephen Adoro's performance against Austria, and rightly so. First point is, he's a right back, so what should he be assessed on? He should be assessed on his defensive capability. Some of the tackles that he put in his position, cutting out runs, I thought he was fantastic. Yep, it was frustrating that we seemed to be, it was a great Scotland performance. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And a couple of times when he's in there, a great position, his final ball wasn't great. It wasn't even that good. It was terrible. But overall, what his job was to defend his lines, and he certainly did that. The criticism that he faces is because he doesn't play with a household team like Rangers, Celtic even, I suppose, to an extent, Aberdeen. The clamour for Tony Ralston to be included in the Scotland squad is one of the most ridiculous things that I've ever come across in all my years following football. He's played about 5 games for Celtic. He couldn't get a game for St Johnstone. The Celtic support said he wasn't fit to wear the jersey. He plays 5 games, 2 of which Celtic win 6-0, and he's a world beater. I just don't understand where the clamour is. Obviously, Patterson looks to be a great player, but yet again, he's not played too many games of football. Stephen O'Donnell is an experienced right back. Yes, he's not in the same league as Andy Robertson, Kieran Tierney. You've mentioned Alaba. He's not. But determination, and sometimes a team just gels together, and he seems to be fundamental to the success of the Scotland team. He's part of that squad, and it really pissed me off reading the kind of negative comments all about his final ball. But if it wasn't for some of the tackles that he put in, we could have lost the game. And it really took a wee bit of shine off the win with the kind of negative. And I really hope that on Saturday the Motherwell fans get really behind him and show their appreciation and how proud that we are. But we've got a player there that's not just played at a major tournament, but went into one of, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, it's one of Scotland's best performances. I would say it's the best result that we've had since we beat France, and there's a Motherwell player part of it. And obviously there's a Motherwell, ex-Motherwell player that scored the goal the last time, so we're maybe not a wee ditty club after all.
There's an analogy that you can make that when you call up the Motherwell right back, he's not going to turn into the Real Madrid right back when he pulls on the dark blue of Scotland. But I think it's such a massive thing. And for how many years did we sit and say, oh, such and such should have got a call-up and he deserves a call-up, but he's always overlooked for an Old Firm player. And then when we get a player in, a club captain, for Christ's sake, there's people not getting behind that. I think that's absurd. The expectations have obviously been turned up a notch with the national team, given that we qualified for the Euros. But even then, you look at the results over the last couple of years, and they've not been spectacular. We've won the games that we were nailed on to win. We've lost quite a lot of frustrating ones. We've been taken the distance by Israel in about 400 times. The playoff final was a fantastic result, obviously away from home as well, but there was no fans in for that game. We got a few rubs of the green and we win it in penalties. I think that Stephen O'Donnell's just been part of one of the best Scotland victories in the last 15 years. And that's something to revel in and really enjoy. And as you say, I think he deserves a hell of a lot of credit for the way that he's obviously been battling health issues as well, come back, and to put in a performance like that over the best part of 75 minutes was an outstanding achievement. And another point I want to bring up that you raised there was the fact that the players around him seemed very comfortable with Stephen O'Donnell being there. They were picking out his runs, and some of them were absolutely brilliant runs. See, the run for to put himself through in goal was absolutely outstanding, especially at that stage of the game when he hadn't played since early August. I felt really proud, and I don't think it took any of the shine off the result for me. I just think that we've got a guy there that can now go on and become an all-time record cap winner. I'm not 100% sure how many Stephen Craigan got off the top of my head, but he must be kind of sneaking up in that now. And he's a guy that's got a couple of years still to go in the international calendar, so regular just now as well. So, yeah, it's a great feat.
I was just going to say, I think it's, even though you do see a lot of criticism for him, and as you said, even from our own fan base, I think luckily for us, Steve Clark really values what he brings to the side. And people say that's favouritism from his time at Kelly, or, you know, he just sticks to the team that's got him to the Euros. But I don't think it's that at all. I think he sees what he brings, and he knows that he's going to need his wing-back to get up and to get back as well. And he knows O'Donnell's going to do that from regardless of who they're playing, whether that be against Austria or England or against a Moldova, a game that we should be winning.
And there's nothing wrong with trust. How important is it that a manager can trust his players? And especially when they're not going out there and letting them down. For me, there's no occasion that Stephen O'Donnell has let Scotland down. The Czech Republic game was a really off day for the full squad. And maybe the occasion got a wee bit the better of him, but I wouldn't say that he was single-handedly the man that let Scotland down on that occasion. I think that more often than not, he's a very, very competent player for the national side. And I don't think that at this stage of his career, Nathan Patterson should be taken over from him. And I certainly don't think that Ralston's ready to do so either. This is the same guy that was in and out the St Johnstone team last season.
For me, I think the one thing I don't really like having kind of disagreements with Motherwell fans, but I've been really, really close to it, sitting in the games when O'Donnell's been playing. Look, he's not the greatest start to the season. Obviously, scoring on goal against St Johnstone and conceding a penalty against Hibs. But some of the shouts that I heard about his attitude. Now, for me, this guy has been put through absolute hell. He's had, obviously, that's quite well publicised at the moment with social media. He has had been absolutely hung, drawn and quartered, and he's had to kind of cope with it with his family. And you would expect him to come back to our club, the community club, if you want to call it that, and be able to be a fan's favourite. And when I could hear Motherwell fans saying, you're not fit to be the captain, I was thinking to myself, this guy is the ideal candidate to be the captain. He is the most experienced player on the pitch at times with what he's had to go through, but he can guide our younger players to expect and how to deal with it. For me, he's really won me over. I've spoke to him a couple of times. He's always got time to stop and speak to my wee boy and stuff like that. And I know that's not the most important thing, but for me, a club at us, it's a real privilege to have a player like Stephen O'Donnell at Motherwell.
I can agree more. As we head to finish up, we'll discuss the fact that the club have announced record season ticket sales for the 2021-22 season. Greg, of course, the initiative was there to honour the season tickets from the season that wasn't for supporters last season. Obviously, we went through a full season where there was no fans inside the stadium. That aside, though, we've went 1,500 above that again. It's a fantastic achievement from the club. They've had so many different initiatives around trying to get more bodies inside Firth Park, and it should be a massive boost. It felt busier at the Dundee game. It certainly felt busier at the Hibs game in the opening day as well. It'll make for a better atmosphere inside the stadium and hopefully can drive the players on.
Yeah, I think it's been clear to see from the first two games that I've been at this season, Hibs and Dundee at home, is the atmosphere has been really, really good. I think especially for the Dundee game, surprised me a bit. You know, playing a recently promoted side, that I wasn't expecting, you know, too much. I thought maybe the Hibs game was the peak of the novelty of getting back to games, and then it would start to die off a wee bit. But it seems to be growing continuously. Speaking from a personal point of view, I hadn't had a season ticket for the past few years just due to work and uni commitments, etc. But now we've got one again this season, and that is just because I think it's just been long to get back to the grounds, and now you really appreciate it more. So I think it's been great that the club have used that this time over the lockdown to come up with this initiative about giving the existing season ticket holders a free renewal, and also increasing the numbers by giving it out to other families. So I think hats off to them. I think it's almost become a cliche now. Everybody says it, how great a club Motherwell are in all aspects off the field. So no, I'm really pleased, and again, I'm really excited to just go to another league game on Saturday against Aberdeen.
I think Greg's summed it up pretty much perfectly there, Pepe. The plan seems to be going by the press release as well, that the club hoped to have another 1,000 added on to that figure. I think it was just above 5,000 the figure was. They hope to have another 1,000 by the time the Wetland Initiative applications have been processed. So you're talking over 6,000 season ticket holders. Yes, there'll be a lot that are extra kids ones, and you're not going to have everyone there every given week. But you're hoping that you'll be topping 5,000 through the gate more often than not, which is a nice boost compared to what we're used to.
I don't want to be the one that pisses on the parade, but what you've got to take into account at the moment is there is the kind of the novelty at the moment with people getting three season tickets, whatever way you want to look at it. And there's also the weather aspect of the first couple of games of the season. It's the weather was, do you know what I mean? I think you said it was great. It's great going to the football with kind of shorts and T-shirt on. I'll be really interested to see what the crowds are like when we're playing, as Greg just said, newly promoted Dundee or a Livingston in a snowy day in December. But listen, that's maybe just me being negative and maybe being a bit of a realist, I don't know. But one thing that I think was quite a nice touch, as I said to you earlier on, I was down at Anfield for the game, and I received an email to inquire if I was all right. And if there was a reason why I didn't go to the game, and it was just another nice touch for the club to do that, to see if there was anything else. There was a wee survey on it to see if there was anything that they would have been able to do if it was maybe that you didn't feel quite right to go back and stuff like that. So again, it was a really nice touch. She opened up the email, and it wasn't a sales pitch. It was a kind of general kind of welfare check almost. So the club just continue to do positive things. So well done to them.
Absolutely, and that seems like a good note to end it on for tonight. Greg, first of all, first time on, thank you very much for joining us tonight, and let's do it again sometime soon.
Not a problem, guys. Thanks very much for having me. Enjoyed that.
Thanks as always, pal.
No probs. Cheers.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back following Saturday's game against Aberdeen. Until then, thank you and goodbye. My first day with you, even when body's gone.